Turning our attention now to biomass and biofuels with Eric Appelbach of Madison. He's president and CEO of Viren Energy Systems. Viren is a six-year-old energy technology company with a goal of using cellulosic feedstuffs to replace fossil fuels in a cost-effective way. And I tell you what, I'm sure you're going to have some questions about this as we go along, and I'm certainly inviting you to join in with those questions and comments. If you're in the Madison area, call us at 263-1890, or anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Eric Appelbach, welcome. Nice to have you with us. Thanks for coming by.
Great to be here.
Tell us about Viren Energy Systems. This is a pretty new company. Started in 2002, if I'm not mistaken.
Somewhere. Right. It is very new. 2002, it was a spinoff of the University of Wisconsin Chemical Engineering Department.
And tell us about what's the goal? What was the goal at the time you started, and what's your goal now?
Well, when we started, the core invention that they thought of about starting a company for was that they figured out they could make hydrogen directly from aqueous sugar. And at the time, fuel cells and hydrogen was a big thing. Mm-hmm. So they said, we're going to start a company based on that. And then what happened as we went on, we figured out that the core patent of making hydrogen could also make all sorts of other things out of sugars as well. The two main things being chemicals, different types of chemicals, and then we found out we could make liquid fuels, which is basically just like gasoline. And it was very effective, so that's what we're working on mostly now.
And when we're talking about plants primarily here, taking plants and making fuel out of those plants. And we've been doing that a long time with corn.
Right.
But corn is not what you're interested in, if I understand
that. That's correct. We looked at the what we call second-generation liquid fuels. Ethanol was what I call a legacy fuel because mm-hmm. we made ethanol so that we could make beer and wine. Then somebody said, well, if we boil off all that water, we could actually burn that ethanol. And what we're doing now is what I would, we're on purpose building the most efficient fuel that we can from those sugar streams. And ethanol, you've heard all the energy balance arguments about ethanol. It is a very energy intensive thing to do to make ethanol. Our process is much more energy efficient. The other thing that ethanol does is it's using corn, and you can already see the pressure on corn. I think corn's up to over $5 a bushel now.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful for the farmers, but it's probably not going to have a big impact in the fuel base of the country. So because of that limitation. So what we're doing is we're looking at using cellulosic sugar streams from mm-hmm. other places mm-hmm. and more sustainable feedstocks.
And probably some farmers would say, well, we don't like the price of corn because if you're a cattle farmer, beef cattle farmer, for example, you've got to buy that corn. It's a pretty expensive proposition.
Right. You're seeing ramifications of higher feed prices across all over the place.
So this this is a different way of looking. It's sort of a second generation, as you say.
Right. And the difference of what we're doing, if you think about it this way, ethanol, you take sugar and you make a bug eat that sugar and it excretes ethanol, right? So mm-hmm. it's a biologic process. What we do is we take similar sugar stream, pass it over a catalyst, solid state catalyst, and out the other end comes something that looks just like gasoline. And there's a couple neat ways to think about that. One is that's where oil came from in the first place. It was plant matter that mm-hmm. degraded and was pressurized over millions of years, formed oil. Well, we're just accelerating that by 15 million years.
Huh. Now, is that the aqueous phase recovering or reforming platform?
That's exactly right. So we're just sugar is our carbon chains with oxygen on it. So if you take that oxygen off, do a few other things, you've got a petroleum product you can burn.
Well, let's take some calls on this. Again, if you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. And Paul in New Berlin is online, so let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. Yeah, I remember back in the early 90s, I was at an agricultural convention with some folks who were had a patent on biomass conversion, and I was helping doing some video taping of that event. And what I remember about it is that the plan is to break down the vegetative life, to delignify it, to get the fiber out and get the cellulose and hemicellulose, which ferments or whatever and creates, you know, the sugars and the fuel. And as far as cost effectiveness, which you were speaking of, what plants, possibly hemp or other vegetative waste, can be used with byproducts of fiber for various fabrics, feed, kitty litter, as well as the fuels and the juices being converted into fuel for vehicles? What do you think is most effective and efficient in this climate for biomass conversion?
In this climate, you hear a lot about the grasses, and what we look for is how much biomass per acre can you make with the least amount of fertilizer and water. That's kind of the way we look at it. So a lot of the things like miscanthus and a lot of these big prairie grasses are the things that have a lot of cellulosic content.
Switchgrass, would that
Switchgrass,
be?
Great example. We're seeing a lot of resurgence in things like sorghum, which I don't think grows as well up in the northern climates here, but is a high carbohydrate crop that could be a good energy crop that does not compete with food, really. Sugar beets are another one. In this country, though, sucrose, table sugar from the beets, is price-supported, so it's not something, it's our tax policy doesn't render that as a good biofuels feedstock.
Along with that line, one of the suggestions I've made to the DNR regarding agricultural runoff from stormwater in the sediments is to have a buffer zone along the waters of the state, in which switchgrass or other products where you don't have to necessarily till the soil and create all sorts of sediment and other problems for aquatic ecosystems downstream. So would you suppose that the farmers, if they did have switchgrass and these other vegetative life that would be sort of just ongoing, that could be utilized for fuel, and if there was a cooperative collective system for those types of products from the land, that could be go along with the production of food and corn, and use the corn for food and use these other products for the biofuel?
Yeah, that's the strategy. There's a huge amount of work on agriculture, how to support both food and energy crops at the same time, and there's some very unique things people are looking at. The new DOE grant here at UW.
The Wisconsin, the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is what's
right.
Come from that, yeah.
Exactly. They're basically going to spend $135 million looking at the best genetics, the best crops, the best, you know, all of the sustainability issues about how to get an energy-based feedstock into the biofuels world.
And we'll get some more on that, but I want to give Hans a chance to join in, too. Thanks, Paul, for calling. Hans from Oregon, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I think that we spend altogether too much time talking about how to feed cars and perpetuate a system which involves human beings taking, you know, 2 or 3 tons of metal and glass with them every time they go from A to B. And to me, the whole paradigm, an automobile-centered paradigm, is bankrupt because no matter what you do, it takes a lot of energy to move around that way. It'd make a lot more sense to devote our thought and creativity towards figuring out how to minimize the amount of machinery we take with us when we go from A to B, and even better, to figure out how to put our A's and B's so that we don't have a need for motorized transportation at all.
I agree.
You agree with that. Any other comments on that?
Well, you know, you look at, I gave a presentation at the Fluna Center two weeks ago, and one of my points was we use 160 billion gallons of liquid, you know, transportation fuel in this country every year. And it's not hard to look around and say, hey, with some conservation and some intelligence and living more like the Europeans and less like Americans, we could probably use 120 billion gallons. There's a much bigger opportunity to reduce our impact by conservation even than from what we're doing, because it takes a heck of a lot of biomass to displace, you know, 40 or 60 billion gallons of motor fuel. So, you know, both are required. One of the things about the energy and the CO2 problems is we've got to do everything that we can, both conservation and replacement of petroleum, to close the gap and keep our carbon emissions at a reasonable level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ideas I've heard is just the idea of growing biomass like switchgrass and stuff, baling it, and throwing it in a power plant. You don't need all this conversion stuff.
Yep.
It's kind of a no-brainer. You don't need to spend millions or billions on research. You just, you know, maybe you want to tweak the hay balers a little bit and stuff. But you know, it's fairly simple, and that would be a big step getting breaking the coal cycle. So.
Yep.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call as well. Our guest today is Eric Appelbach of Madison, president and CEO of Virent Energy Systems. It's a six-year-old energy technology company. Its goal of using cellulosic feedstuffs to replace fossil fuels in a cost-effective way. Certainly, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. And he'll be with us right up till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking biomass and biofuels now with Eric Appelbach of Madison, president and CEO of Virent Energy Systems. It's a six-year-old energy technology company with a goal of using cellulosic feedstuffs to replace fossil fuels in a cost-effective way. Really pleased to have him along. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Herb in Milwaukee has been waiting a while, so let's go to Herb. Herb, hi. Thank you for waiting. Hello.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question is this. I'm wondering, has anyone looked into the possibility of using the photosynthetic enzymes and coupling it with cellulosic fermentation to, you know, I know what photosynthesis does is to split water apart to generate a flow of electrons, and it captures, photosynthesis will also capture carbon dioxide. It almost sounds like it could be coupled with what you're doing there with cellulosic fermentation. Has anyone looked into using photosynthesis as an energy source?
Well, I'll tell you where the most interesting leading edge work's being done kind of in that right now is with algae. People are looking at algae as a feedstock pretty seriously, significant amount of money going in there. And one of the exciting things there is algae can be grown very, very quickly, high density per acre on land that you can't farm on. And you can actually utilize the CO2 cycle. So when we make our fuel, some CO2 comes out, that can be fed back in, and it accelerates the growth of the algae. So you've actually got a nice closed-loop system. And there's a lot of excitement there. Again, it's an unmatched amount of biomass per square area. And if the engineering can be done effectively, you could have a continuous flow biomass growth and biomass conversion cycle that also closes a CO2 loop.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of what I was wondering, but they are using algae for this. Okay, well, thanks for the information.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We just see that in the news that General Motors is investing in a plant in Illinois, I think that's into bioprocessing. And it's interesting to see that some of these major corporations with really big bucks are getting into this.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest. People are in varying degrees of strategic planning. You know, the big oil guys have got to get used to the fact that oil's not going to be around forever. We have Honda has invested in our company. We have a partnership with Shell Hydrogen to make hydrogen out of sugars. And Cargill was an early investor of ours. So we've got a significant corporate group put together so we can go all the way from Cargill on the biomass side through Honda on the engine side.
Very, very, very interesting. Thanks again, Herb, for calling. Sean in Madison will give you a chance. Sean, hello to you.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Good. I was wondering about the agricultural methods that these alternative cellulose feedstocks are being grown under. I know that, or at least as I understand it, corn-derived ethanol isn't really a viable alternative fuel because of the conventional agricultural methods needed to grow the vast quantities that we do grow, which, you know, is basically using large amounts of petroleum in the fertilizer and some of the insecticides. So I was wondering if that is factoring into your studies at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It's one of the main reasons we don't use corn-based sugars. We feel like that as a feedstock is going to reach its limit just with the current ethanol plans that are being rolled out. So we really are looking at more long-term sustainable feedstocks. So that's, again, where you get into the miscanthus and switchgrass and non-food related feedstocks. Algae, I just mentioned, was another one that's coming up that looks very exciting but has a lot of work to do.
And I know the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center has been zeroing in a little bit on biomass. I think the USDA estimates there's about 1 billion dry tons of biomass, fuel wood, perennial crops, grains, crop residues.
Right.
And that could be available pretty much annually.
Right. Exactly. And that's one of the things. Right now, there's a tremendous capability to modify the genetics of plants. Historically, they've been doing that to figure out how to make food better. Now they're turning their attention to using that same ability to modify the genetics, only use it for an energy feedstock. So they have, I think, a lot of things they can go do to reduce the water usage, reduce the fertilizer demand. They're looking at plants that store CO2 in the soil better. And some of those things will really be realized to give a more sustainable feedstock supply.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean. Michael in Belleville, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. First-time caller. A lot of questions. Earlier in the program, your guest was stating that they use the chemical breakdown process to derive the ethanol. Kind of interesting where they're going to put their hazardous byproduct that is created by the chemical process. With the algae biomass.
Yeah.
Overseas, they've started testing that with their coal plants and using that as a filter on their exhaust stacks. And they've increased the carbon content by over 50%, and they're using it for biomass production for fuel. I'm currently in college, and I've read all the scientific data. It's like 350-some-odd articles, and ethanol is not the way to go. It actually pollutes the atmosphere 50% worse because of the chemical process for the carbon molecule. It doesn't break down. I'll take my answers off the air.
All right. Thank you for calling. Okay, three or four comments here from our caller, and wondering about the hazardous byproduct. He said there was some hazardous byproducts that are produced in the breakdown process you were talking about.
Right. There actually aren't any hazardous byproducts. The when you take sugar water, which is what we start with, and you pass it over a catalyst, you tend to get, well, gasoline is somewhat of a, I got to admit, gasoline yeah. can be quantified as hazardous. But it's flammable. You've got to treat it right. But that's the product. So we're all yeah. used to dealing with that. In terms of byproducts, our byproducts tend to be methane, ethane, and propane, and hydrogen. Okay, so these are, that's basically natural gas plus hydrogen. So these are usable chemicals, or it's a great fuel gas. So that's a byproduct. There, you may have a few things in the wastewater stream that are very minor and can be handled in a conventional wastewater treatment plant. So there's really nothing hazardous coming out of the process.
Okay. And I don't know if you're familiar with the, I think he said Japan or China was using algae as a filter on
stacks? There's some places in the U.S. doing that as well, basically using algae to scrub the CO2 from the effluent of a coal plant. The issue you have there is that you know, it gets dark at night and algae photosynthesis kind of stops with no light. So there are some basic issues that people are struggling with. It's one way to reduce the CO2 impact, but there are some core engineering issues they're going to have to solve.
All right. Michael, thank you again for calling. Dwight and Beloit, it's your turn next. Hi, Dwight.
Yes. Good morning. Or maybe it's afternoon,
afternoon.
I guess. My interest is in what they call net energy, and I'm thinking about using any kind of plant life, which during its life it's absorbing carbon dioxide. And if it absorbs a pound of carbon dioxide, then when you eventually end up with some sort of alcohol or fuel and burn it, the exact same amount of carbon dioxide comes back out into the atmosphere. So I guess I'm thinking of that, and then I'm thinking, well, I haven't seen studies on, other than corn, on net energy. You know, so are there some that give you the big picture?
We've done quite a bit of study on ours. Just to be clear, we're making gasoline out of the sugars. So if you look at that and you think, well, ethanol mixes with water, so they have to put a tremendous amount of natural gas in to boil off all that water in a distillation column. When we make gasoline, it floats. You've seen gasoline float on water. It doesn't mix at all. So we don't have to expend energy to drive water out of our end product. And that is a huge advantage in terms of energy balance of the production process. The other thing is ethanol has about 68% of the energy content per gallon of that gasoline does. So when we make gasoline, we have much higher energy content in the final product. And so the way we measure energy efficiency is we look at the energy content of the sugar and then the percent of the of that energy that we can get into the gasoline product that we're trying to make. And that tends to be very high, actually. The other thing that comes out of that is since we're not expending or burning natural gas to dry out our product, we then have a much lower CO2 footprint than the ethanol process. And the third area that you see is that we can put our product right into a conventional pipeline and then the existing distribution channel. I don't know if you've seen it. You know, ethanol loves water. It'll suck up water, so they have to truck it. They can't put it in a pipeline. And then you have to be careful with it because it will absorb water, and you do not want to put that into your fuel system of your car.
Well, under your system, and I don't know where you are in the process you're developing right now, but what do you expect in terms of cost of a gallon of your gas versus a gallon of the normal gas? Let's
put
it that way.
Right. Well, if you look at the cost of any biofuel, 60 to 70% of it's going to be related to the price of the feedstock. So we spend a lot of time looking at cheap feedstocks. The benefit we have, again, there is that we are using a catalyst, not a bug, to convert the sugar. Bugs are very finicky. They will eat one sugar, and that's it. What we can process many different types of sugars out of the cellulosic feedstock stream, and that's what gives us one of the big advantages. So we have a much bigger process window, and that drives our cost down. We're currently estimating that we can, in a dollars per million BTU basis, which is the way we look at it, because you're producing an energy product. We look at that, and we can be at or below current petroleum prices with no incentives. Now, as you know, right now ethanol gets about a 51 cent per gallon tax credit in this country. And for cellulosic products, they just are passing much more aggressive tax credits to try to spur that industry forward. The new energy bill has that in there.
So it could be a lot cheaper.
Exactly. They're talking about doing $1.25 a gallon type credit for cellulosics.
Now, when you talk about passing this over a converter, is it?
It's a catalyst.
Catalyst.
Right.
And so it's not a microbe or it's not a bacteria. What is it that this catalyst?
Catalysts are just metals, different types of metals, and all they do is make they change the kinetics of a chemical process to make it go forward a lot easier and a lot faster. they're not used in the reaction. They're mm-hmm. they're just there inside there. And the interesting thing about catalysts, if you went to a petroleum refinery, catalysts are how they do all the processing now in a petroleum refinery. So when you really look at our process, it could be just what we like to say is we're going to make a refinery an herbivore. Right now, it can only eat fossil fuels, right? You'd like it if it could eat sugars as well and still come out with the same product
slate.
You can make diesel, jet fuel, and gasoline out of sugars. And in reality, all you're doing is using a catalyst in a slightly different way to take the oxygen off the sugar and save that 15 million years that I talked about.
Oh. Scott in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Just kind of a question or whatever. It might be kind of off the wall. I don't know too much about this stuff, but you're talking about using like algae and stuff. And I don't know where you're based out of, but like in Wisconsin, we have a big problem with like Eurasian milfoil. If that's like something, because I'm sure Larry knows, it's pretty much taking over a lot of the lakes in the southern part, and I'm up northern part, and I've seen some lakes get taken over in the last year or so. And I'm sure, you know, that you're talking about cost-effective and cheap. I'm sure the DNR would, you know, if you gather it, you could probably just have it. I know they do that a lot, and then they end up just burning it around here.
Well, what about something like Eurasian milfoil? I'm sure you're familiar with that plant.
Yeah, it's interesting because in Japan they did a lot of studies with kelp, which is almost the same thing, except it grows in the sea in the salt water. But it's the highest conversion of sunlight to carbohydrates per meter of any plant. The challenge with it is that it's expensive to, if you actually want to plant it and harvest it, mm-hmm. the cost of planting and harvesting was pretty high. So that's why people get into looking at algae, because algae can be put into a farming system with pumps. It's pumpable, can be grown continuously in a continuous operation versus, in essence, farmed.
And to go into lakes and pull it out, I suppose that's pretty cost prohibitive.
It's expensive. If you look at the type of facility we're talking about building, we want to be able to produce 30 to 100 million gallons of fuel at one site. That's a lot of biomass.
Yeah.
So you're going to have an access to a large amount of biomass that's at a reasonable price.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott, for calling. Appreciate it. Bill in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I guess I had a question that Larry just brought up, and that was the nature of the catalysts that are used, because you answered the question on the earlier caller that there was no hazardous byproducts, but the question on the catalysts, if they're the same cracking catalyst as in the petroleum industry, they're probably heavy metal catalysts, and whether they're used for petroleum or for biomass, what are the what's the waste stream for the manufacturer and disposal when those catalysts finally wear out?
Mm-hmm. Catalysts actually contain some precious metals, so you'll have some platinum and some other things in there that you would never want to have go down the drain or go away. So generally what happens in that industry is you take your catalyst out when it's spent, and we target about a year of operation. So then you take the catalyst out of the reactor, you send it back to the supplier, they regenerate it. So they pull the metals off, they mount the metals back on new carriers, they quality check it, they ship it back to you, you put it back in the reactor. If you actually lose some of those precious metals down the drain, you've got a big problem because it ruins the economics of the plant. And one of the things we're benefiting from is the chemical and petroleum industry has worked on these issues for many decades, and they've seen most of these issues before and already solved them. So we can rely on a lot of those things that they've already done.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Mike in Langley County, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'll be as quick as possible. Is there something about sugar, like sugar cane, that's much more efficient for making ethanol? And if so, since we're too far north to grow sugar cane, would growing sorghum be a good substitute? And then my other question would, if any biomass is going to produce, used to be produced ethanol, How about aspen, which really needs no care whatsoever? You cut the tree down, it's got nodes on the root system. They come back like all by themselves. As they thin themselves out, they fertilize themselves with the fallen trees and the leaves, and in 40 years you can cut it down again and do it all over again. And oftentimes an acre or two of aspen is really only one plant. So I'd listen off the air.
Right.
Yeah, we two good points. We are spending time working with sucrose from sugarcane because of its, in our view, it's a global, it is the global sugar crop. You see why Brazil has been so successful. It's because they've got the climate. Sugarcane is extremely effective at turning sunlight into carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. It's easy to squeeze out the sugar. There's not an extensive processing step there. So sugarcane, in our view, whether it's Southeast Asia, India, Brazil, Colombia, Argentina, you're going to see anywhere that can grow sugarcane, it will probably be one of the top producers of carbohydrates for biofuels. It already is, actually. So we are working on that. Sorghum, I think, is a good crop as well, and you're going to see some genetic engineering there that'll make it even better. It's interesting you mentioned aspen. I was just out in Telluride, Colorado, and everybody was selling me on aspen on how they're weed trees and they're easy to convert and, you know, on and on and on. So I think aspen is a good rapid growth. It's the wood is light and easy to get the carbohydrates out of. So in terms of woody biomass, we are talking to a number of large paper and pulp companies. The beauty of the paper and pulp companies is they already have the collection mechanism and processing mechanism in place. They process massive amounts of wood and have the ability to possibly feed up some sides or free up some side streams of some very good sugars to make biofuels out of.
And, you know, here we sit in Wisconsin. We're the number one paper making state, I believe, in the country. So we got a lot of trees out there and a lot of waste from those trees, too.
Correct.
And I suppose, will the waste of tree, you know, the limbs and so forth that aren't used, could they be? Is that a reasonable thing to expect that we can convert fuels from that?
People have talked about that. The challenge you get, it's like kelp. If I told you you had to go out and pick up all the waste twigs and sticks and stuff and in the woods, you'd go, oh, my God, how are we going to do that? You know, so it's a challenge on the cost of collecting and getting it to the plant gate. So, in essence, when we look at woody biomass, a lot of that's why we like the biorefineries. A paper mill is really a biorefinery, right? It's already there.
Yeah.
Got all this infrastructure already built, and they've driven their costs down significantly. So, if you can now leverage off of that, debottleneck it, liquid fuels or hydrogen or any chemical just becomes one more product stream out of an existing biorefinery, instead of trying to go reinvent the wheel and create a whole new collection mechanism.
And what's your timeline? You guys have done an awful lot in just a few years. What are you looking for a timeline?
Right. We've got about 30,000 square feet here in town and 18 pilot plants running here in Madison. They're smaller, but they are very representative of a full process. So our next step is we're very happy with what we've seen so far. But now since we're a new process, we've got to now take that up a size. So our whole focus right now is to build larger scale pilot plants that are completely integrated and fully demonstrate how a commercial plant would run.
Well, Eric, it's exciting. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it. I hope we can have you back at some point and get an update from you.
Great. Thanks for the invite. I enjoyed it.
Eric Appelbach of Madison, President and CEO of Virent Energy Systems. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.